And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, this month marks the sixth anniversary of another declaration of war of a sort. On the 4th of February, 2020, Donald Trump's first administration activated the Emergency Use Authorization Act and the PREP Act, precursors to Operation Warp Speed, the COVID-19 response, resulting, my second guest says, in the worldwide forced vaccination of billions of people, millions of whom were injured or killed. That operation was curiously lauded recently by the man who launched it as one of the greatest military feats ever. Debbie Lerman is a retired medical writer and current investigative researcher. She has focused on all things COVID-related since 2022 independently and with the Brownstone Institute as of 2023. Many of her articles on the topic feature in her book, The Deep State Goes Viral, Pandemic Planning and the COVID Coup. Her recent article, Cheering the Militarization of Everything, Reflections on the Sixth Anniversary of When COVID Was Declared a National Security Threat, follows the thread. Welcome back to the program, Debbie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Debbie, if it's true that truth is the first casualty of war, what lie lay at the core of Donald Trump's greatest military feat?
Well, actually, the lie was what was told to the public. So the greatest military feat statement is, I mean, I don't know about greatest, but as far as military feat, is actually the truth. So when Donald Trump said that some people say Operation Warp Speed was one of the greatest military feats ever, he was telling the truth for a change about Operation Warp Speed, because what the public was told was that this was a public health response to a public health crisis, and that we had to lock everything down, the entire world, and wait for a miracle vaccine or a miracle product that was going to solve the problem. And that was the lie, because what it really was a biodefense lockdown until vaccine response to, we don't know what the threat was, whether it was a lab leak, whether it was real, whether it existed or didn't exist. But we do know that the response was pre-planned, and that it would have been that same response no matter what the virus or the threat had been, because that was what was decided, you know, in the what I call the global biodefense public-private partnership. So it's this giant global cabal of companies and governments and intelligence agencies and military and NATO, all of whom planned, coordinated, and ran the COVID event in the world. So it was actually a moment of truth when Donald Trump said that it was a great military feat. And that's what was noteworthy about it.
Well, and he does have a talent for lying truthfully and the opposite somehow. You say in the article, too, now, when this Operation Warp Speed was engaged, so to speak, there had been at that time zero deaths and fewer than a dozen cases in the United States reported, less than 500, if I'm getting the number right, worldwide. How did they manage to detect such a minuscule event to begin with, and then jump into action when this could have been anything? It could have been nothing. That is a big mystery to me.
Correct.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad we settled that.
That is the big mystery. So the big mystery is why. And well, I mean, I have a guess as to why. It's not that they were detecting anything specific. It was that they were detecting what they had wanted to detect, which is some kind of whatever they wanted it to be, a virus that was a huge national security threat, which is what they did not tell the public, but they did tell the pharmaceutical companies and the military industrial complex on February 4th, 2020. So you remember in January 2020, they started with the panic porn. They started with the people falling down dead on the streets of Wuhan. And they had a whole World Health Organization investigation into it and into China's response. And this was all happening in January 2020. So they were already hyping up this thing, whatever it was. Even though, again, very few people had died, it had not spread outside of China at that point in January, or at least nobody knew whether it had or hadn't. And yet they were drumming it up then. Then they had the Diamond Princess spectacle, which they put on the front page of, for about the whole month of February, to get people to think that this was something that was spreading outside of China.
And what's the Diamond Princess again? I mean, remind us.
Sure, the Diamond Princess was a cruise ship that they decided had some people who were infected with this. It wasn't called COVID, it was called the novel coronavirus, or as Donald Trump liked to call it, the China virus. And so they decided that people on this ship had been infected, or that somebody had boarded it from someplace where there might have been an infection or something like that. And so they quarantined it. So they basically forced everyone to stay on the ship. Which, of course, if it were a very contagious virus, would be a really stupid thing to do. And so then they decided that lots of people on the ship got the virus and a few people died from the virus. And so that was used again to drum up a whole lot of panic about how this could spread and how easily it was spreading and how it was silently spreading. So most of the people who got it didn't even know that they had it. And you couldn't even tell because they didn't have any symptoms, which is actually paradoxical and doesn't make any sense, because if there's a virus that you get and most people get and don't get sick and don't die, then it's not a very dangerous virus. So they were trying to say one thing and the opposite, and they managed to do it because the propaganda was very successful. So they said it was spreading silently, and nobody knew how it was spreading or where it was spreading and how fast it was spreading, because nobody was getting sick. But oh, oops, it's also extremely deadly, and we have to shut down the whole world.
Well, yeah, but we could all be like Typhoid Mary. We were like secret carriers of this disease without knowing it, and it affected some people, maybe your grandma. So you can't go see your grandma and such like this, right? I seem to recall that was a logic. Just talking to you now, I'm getting a visceral reaction, like physical in my body. And I guess it's something, remembering this, it's been a while. I think a lot of people have suppressed this and, oh yeah, shit. And then I'm starting to feel that actual, the anxiety that was being generated at the time.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I also have PTSD from it.
Is that what it
My
is?
PTSD is not the anxiety, because I never had any COVID anxiety, because I knew from the beginning that something was amiss and that they were way, way, way overstating the threat and that they were propagandizing us for some reason. I didn't know why at the time. So I didn't have, so I have the same reaction that you do, in the sense that I feel it in my body, but I feel the awful, more than panic, the awful despair, and when I realized that the entire population was being propagandized and it was working, that they were able to propagandize the whole world and most people fell for it. It just blew my mind, and it still does 6 years later. I still can't get over it. I thought I was too naive, and I thought that we had learned, that humanity had learned from the 20th century atrocities of the Nazis and the communists and blah, 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 and all the totalitarian regimes, that we were never going to be hoodwinked again into doing things that were clearly, against our best interests and the best interests and the lives and health and the health of our family and our loved ones. But clearly, that was not the case. So yeah, so I get a very visceral reaction even when I talk about it, because it's so scary to me that this is still possible and it's still going on.
And what tipped you off? I mean, I'm just naturally cynical to begin with, and I remember the previous attempt at the big mass vaccination. I don't know, what was it, 2002 or something? I can't remember. It was one of the bird flus or something, and it turned out to be a big squib. And it seemed, I guess, the propaganda wasn't so good that time. I never really fell for it, and this time it seemed to me to be an echo of that. So I was just. This sounds like bullshit to me. I mean, but what was it that made you think, oh, there's something fishy about this?
Well, when they, sorry, I'll start from the beginning. Just as you were saying, in January and February, there were all these kind of panic porn reports with people falling down dead and, front page articles about the cruise ships and stuff, but nobody was getting it and nobody was dying. So I thought, just like you, I thought, okay, this is just one of those, novel viruses. They discover it, they figure out what it is. A few people, it gets contained and we move on. And I kept looking, and I don't watch news, and at the time I was listening to NPR and the New York Times, unfortunately, but I did stop in March 2020.
Well,
But what
something good
happened,
came out of it after all, then, at least.
something good came out of it. Yeah. So, but what happened was, I just looked at the numbers. So there's the R World in Numbers, the people who just keep track of how many people are getting infected in different countries and how many people are dying. And I just looked at that. I think I remember it was like in January, February, and my husband is a doctor. So I asked him, like, what do you think about this China thing, this virus? And he was like, oh, it's nothing. And we both looked at it and it was nothing. Nobody was getting infected. Nobody was dying. Even in China, even in the places where they said it was the most horrible. And so it was a nothing burger. And I expected everybody to understand that, just like they did with all the other viruses in the past. And then in March, the beginning of March 2020, when all of a sudden they came and said, we have to start wearing masks and we have to start distancing and we have to lock down and we have to shut down the economy. That, I mean, that actually shocked me more than anything, was when they said, we have to shut everything down. Then we have to like print trillions of dollars out of thin air. In order to keep everything shut down. And I thought, there's absolutely no way that anybody is going to agree to this. This is complete insanity. No, we've never shut anything down ever for anything, not for war, not for disease. Never in the history of humanity has this ever happened. And this is a nothing virus. So why would they do it now? So I kept thinking, well, people are going to realize it and they're going to stop. And they didn't. And that's what. I mean, it was very, very devastating to watch how this evolved. So what it wasn't one thing that tipped me off, it was that I never thought that it was a big deal to begin with. And when they started making a big deal out of it on the media and people started going nuts, and I started talking to people like my friends, I would call them and I would say, "Can you believe this? Can you believe that they want us to wear masks?" Masks don't work against viruses. That's like something that you learn in like your first year as an intern in medical school, as my husband, who's an oncologist, knew, because his patients who are severely immunocompromised would ask him, "Doctor, should I wear a mask to, help, so that they don't get infected, so they don't go viral?" And he said, "Absolutely not. It doesn't help. Masks are to prevent, spit and sweat from getting from a surgeon's face into a patient's wounds. That's the only thing that, masks in hospitals should be used for." And so, but when I would ask my friends or when I would talk to them about it, I would say, "This is so crazy, this whole like dumb social distancing thing. I mean, what is 6 feet? Where did that come from? Why are we doing this? Viruses travel more than 6 feet." And they would say to me, "Are you a Trumpist?"
Yes.
Okay, so they didn't address my, and they knew that I was a lifelong Democrat, liberal, libtard, right? I mean, they knew that because they were my best friends. And yet they said, "Are you a Trumpist?" So they didn't address what I was saying. They didn't address the actual content of what I was saying or the arguments that I was making. They made a political and personal statement to me based on those, what I was saying, the facts that I was trying to convey. And that, I think, I mean, I keep saying what was the most scary, but that was one of the scariest things, because then I realized I can't even have a conversation about what's happening because it's been so politicized and it's been so propagandized that there's no way to actually address reality. Like, reality doesn't exist anymore. So when reality stopped existing, that's when I flew into like major panic. I was not panicking about the virus. I was panicking about the response.
Yeah. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Debbie Lerman. Debbie is a retired medical writer, and currently she's an investigative researcher. She has focused on COVID-related issues since 2022. Her book is The Deep State Goes Viral: Pandemic Planning and the COVID Coup. We're talking in and around her recent article, Cheering the Militarization of Everything: Reflections on the Sixth Anniversary of When COVID Was Declared a, quote, National Security Threat. Yeah, I think for me, Davey, when I heard the word lockdown, because there had been lockdowns before this, but they're for different reasons. And of course, lockdown is a term they use in prisons when they lock down the prison because there's been some kind of, you know, riot or whatever. But then suddenly this term started creeping out of prison. It had jailbreaked, and we were being subjected as the citizenry to lockdowns. And then anytime I heard that term, I thought, oh, okay, well, this is some kind of scheme, some rightist plot, some fascist operation run by the police and military complex, which you write about. You talk about the normalized militarization of emergencies, and we've seen this over and over again. Katrina pops to mind immediately with police don't look like police anymore. They look like stormtroopers, and this has happened over this last period. What role did COVID play in furthering and strengthening the militarization of everything?
That's a great question. I think that's the key question. And I think that what it did in terms of normalizing is that it made people want it. So it's not even that it's just happening and we accept it. It's that by scaring people so much and propagandizing them so much about how dangerous this was and how much they needed protection from somewhere, right? People were just desperate for somebody to protect them from this horrible, horrible threat. It made people ask for it. So people wanted quarantines. They got mad if you did something against that. They actually wanted the police to come and arrest you if you weren't following the COVID protocols. They actually probably, now I don't know this, but you know, the states of emergency that were declared for COVID, which for the PREP Act, it's still ongoing until 2029, by the way, and has not been revoked. So we are still in a state of emergency for COVID officially. Mm. And I think people not only didn't object to it, but they actually wanted it. And so a lot of those people, especially as the years evolved, as the story of COVID evolved, it became, as everything does in the controlled narrative environment that we live in, it became a left-right thing or a Democrat-Republican thing. So the Democrats were the ones who really were in favor of all of these things. The Republicans somewhat, but not so much. So now exactly what they're doing. It didn't just normalize, it made people accept and want the military to be involved in things like public health, in things like their private lives, which I found to be extremely disturbing. Now, let's say there were some people who realized that that was bad, and a lot of them were Republicans. Some of them were in the so-called medical freedom space, which is now MAHA, mostly. And so now those people need to be brought in to the fold. And so how are they being brought in with the illegal immigration thing? And so now it's okay not to use the military against people who aren't following COVID protocols or the police, but against people who are suspected of being illegal immigrants or even citizens now. It's okay. And building huge quarantine camps for them. So there were quarantine camps that were used for COVID. A lot of it was done in other countries too, like Australia was a big place where they did quarantines. And now they're doing quarantine camps for immigrants. So they're just using whichever side of the political spectrum needs to be convinced that militarization is a good thing. They'll just use whatever issue that side cares about. And they'll say, oh, you know, shooting citizens in the face or arresting them in their homes without any kind of warrant or anything, it's okay because we're actually fighting illegal immigration, or it's okay because we're fighting this really scary virus. Either way, what they're doing is they're just getting people to accept and want this kind of exertion of force and control in their lives. I don't understand it. I think it's horrible. And I think the people who realized during COVID how bad it was, I'm really, really upset and disappointed in those people because they're just falling for it. They're falling for all the propaganda that's being used against them now by Trump. And when Trump said the truth about Operation Warp Speed being a military operation, I believe he was actually speaking to those people who now are applauding the fact that the United States is this giant militarized, I mean, it's not just now, but they're not objecting to it anymore. They used to, you know, I thought people voted for Trump because he was going to be the America first and peace, and, you know, we're not going to spend any more money on Ukraine or on, you know, Israel Palestine or on any other foreign wars. We're going to actually spend money trying to make the lives of American citizens better. Yeah, so I don't see that happening.
Well, and if it's not COVID, or even if it's not immigrants, there's always something else. You write that there's since Trump came in, it's only been a year and some, 11 states of emergency declared. That makes a total of, across the country, 48 states of emergency. You've almost got as many states of emergency as you have actual states right now in America.
Yes, and states, so specifically, if we talk about, so we talked about the militarization and the use of police force and how people now actually want that. States of emergency are the most important thing that I think you asked about what was normalized during COVID. And states of emergency is when we move outside of the scope of the Constitution, of legal protections, of judicial oversight, of congressional legal or regulatory oversight. So when there's a state of emergency, whatever the subject is of that emergency, basically the president and as the commander in chief and the military, which is under his command, can do whatever they want, and you have no recourse. And so during COVID, we saw that. And now, one of the most important states of emergency that people don't know about that Trump declared the day after he was inaugurated is the state of emergency for energy. And the state of emergency for energy is basically an AI supporting state of emergency, which means that we can build, the AI industry can build any kind of energy infrastructure or take any kind of energy that they need for AI. And nobody can do or say anything about it. And Trump bragged about that, oh, isn't it great? You know, it would have taken us years to get the regulations and to get the authorization to actually build, like, let's say we want a nuclear power plant, you know, in every community that's going to have one of these giant AI databases, or data centers. That would have People wouldn't like that, right? And so we're just bypassing all of that. We're just saying a state of emergency, we can do whatever we want. And if people object, the military can come in, right? Let's say we want to have a big demonstration against AI data centers and against whatever energy they're going to be using for that. A lot of people think it's just they're just going to take it off the grid and we're not going to have enough you know, electricity or energy for just regular daily operations. Whatever they do, if we decide that we're going to protest it as citizens, the military can come in and just squash it. Like we can't even protest it. So that's what a state of emergency does. And I wish people understood that when Trump declares states of emergency, what he's doing is exactly what happened during COVID, is that now we don't have any legal protections anymore for
Yeah,
that.
well, when you start getting brownouts and stuff, but it's not only that, it's also water. These centers hoover up billions of gallons of water. You quote Trump in Davos, fittingly, just a little more than a month ago, saying, quote, "Under the emergency declaration, I can get the approvals done myself without having to get through years of waiting. So I'm going to give emergency declarations so that they can start building them, those AI centers, almost immediately. I think it was largely my idea." What a maroon. I just don't, anyway, you know that everybody is laughing at Donald Trump, by the way, if Riley, if nothing else. And so this is where we are, and it's not just, of course, in America, in Britain, and that too. I just saw that these data centers are going to be plopped by the dozen in Wales, of all places, this beautiful pastoral corner of Great Britain. They're going to be bombed by a dozen or more of these huge data centers hoovering up all the water that's there, you know, because that's what it has. Debbie, we're fast running out of time, but this... You finish your piece, and again, Debbie's piece is Cheering the Militarization of Everything, Reflections on the Sixth Anniversary of When COVID Was Declared a National Security Threat. You talk about, at first, it was hidden, this military corporate COVID convergence, and now it's celebrated, as Donald Trump recently did with his greatest COVID response ever statements, you know. But... you say that people should fear this naturally if they care about their rights and the Constitution and America and all those things, and they should find out more about it. You recommend the COVID dossier. What's the COVID dossier?
The COVID dossier is a document that I put together with another independent researcher named Sasha Latipova. And we spent years researching what happened during COVID, who was responsible, who was running the operation. And so the dossier is just a compilation of evidence that shows that the military and intelligence authorities in all countries, pretty much, certainly all Western countries, but many others as well, were the ones who were in charge of COVID. It was not the public health agencies. So it is a document. There's no opinions. There's no interpretation. You can click on the links and you can find all of the source materials that show that COVID was a military intelligence allied with corporate, which, you know, that alliance is the most dangerous alliance between government force and corporate wealth and power. And so that's what COVID was. And the COVID dossier shows that is the power structure that is running things now. So Trump is just an agent of that system. He's not controlling it. He's not in charge of it. He didn't make it up and he didn't put it together. He's just one actor in a much, much larger global public-private partnership, which incorporates the corporations, the global corporations, and the military-industrial complex, and the media, social media, Silicon Valley, AI. And it's not national, it's global. The COVID dossier also emphasizes that what's happening, like you said with Wales, that's really interesting. I didn't know that about the AI in Wales, but it's not just here, it's everywhere. And the coordination is not local, it is global.
But that's not going to stop Donald Trump from taking credit for all of it, just so that
yeah.
You can find Debbie's writing at debbielerman.substack.com. That's D-E-B-B-I-E, Lerman, L-E-R-M-A-N.substack.com. Thanks a lot, Debbie, for coming on again today and telling us a little bit about your latest work and giving us the heads up for that. Thanks, too, to Diana Johnstone. Remember, her book is World Watcher on Manufacturing War. You can find that at claritypress.com. Thanks again, Debbie, for coming on, eh?
Thanks so much for having me.
That's all I got for this week. Till the next time. As long